This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. While the death toll for American troops in Iraq is known precisely, counting the number of Iraqis killed since the U.S.-led invasion is difficult, dangerous, and politically charged. There is no consensus, and estimates vary. The U.S. government says it doesn't keep a count, so the task falls to outside agencies, and no matter which estimate you look at, questions arise about methodology and about political bias. The latest survey, issued just yesterday, was conducted by the Iraq Health Ministry and the World Health Organization, and it estimated the number of Iraqis killed in the first 3 years following the invasion at about 151,000. Other estimates are much higher, others much lower. So today we'd like to go through these figures and try to make sense of the difficulty and the value of counting the dead in Iraq. Later in the hour, Andy Kohut of the Pew Research Center joins us to talk about how and why pollsters completely missed the story on the Democratic side of the New Hampshire primary earlier this week. But first, counting the Iraqi dead. How do you count the dead in a war zone? How can you tell who's an insurgent fighter or an innocent civilian? How do you tell who killed who? And how does the number of Iraqis killed color your view of the war? Our number is 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Thies Bourma. He is the Director of Measurements and Health Information Systems for the World Health Organization and one of the authors of the new WHO survey. He joins us from the studios of the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. And it's good to have you on the program today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And why is it important, do you think, that this survey and others like it be conducted?
I think in any conflict or emergency situation, it's important to have an idea of how many people are affected, how many people are dying. That's an important statistic to estimate the seriousness of the situation. It's an important estimate of how to respond in it in terms of health services and other issues. So while it's a very difficult issue to get the number right, it is an important figure.
And how difficult is it? It's a country in the middle of a war, many places.
Well, indeed, and obviously in any country, the best way to count the dead is through a registration system like we have in many countries. And Iraq had the system in place, although it even was incomplete before the invasion. But the system is now not functioning, so we don't get a good count of the dead and what people died of from the death registry system. So other ways have to be found. Well, one way that is also often used in developing countries is through household surveys. And then in the household survey, one tries to identify death in, say, last 3 or 5 years in this case, and obtain an estimate of how many people have died from this sample of households in the country.
From a sample of households, obviously you can't go to every house in Iraq.
Indeed, and that is already a difficulty, particularly in conflict situations, because violence tends to be very much located, and one therefore needs a very large sample with many clusters or sampling areas to try to get the best possible picture. So in the survey that the results were released yesterday, the Iraq Family Health Survey, there were more than 1,000 clusters selected all over Iraq, and each cluster only 10 households were interviewed, and those were selected prior to the fieldwork.
And who then went and did the survey? Was it military personnel or doctors or nurses? Who did this?
The survey was fieldwork was done by the Ministry of Health with the assistance of the statistical office in Iraq and with technical assistance from us. The household visits were done by doctors and nurses.
A lot of people in Iraq don't have much trust for the government.
But in this case, we're talking about doctors and nurses, so I think they're. I hope that the people still have trust in the people, their own health workers.
And your findings, and we're saying 151,000, that's somewhere in the middle of a high and low end from just over 100,000 to more than 200,000. So this estimate is just that, it's an estimate.
Absolutely. We know that a survey is an imperfect method to estimate death, even in peacetime. and especially also in conflict situations. So we have to be very careful when we interpret the results of a survey. And this range of 104 to 23,000 comes from several factors that we've taken into account. One is that some of the clusters, about 10%, could not be visited. Those were because of higher levels of insecurity. So those clusters have higher mortality than the clusters that could be visited. So we actually made an adjustment for that. For instance, in Baghdad, for the clusters that could not be visited, we assumed the mortality to be four times higher than the clusters that were visited, and we used the Iraq body count, the media-based counting of civilian deaths, as a way to come up with that number. Second thing is that, of course, as you said earlier, it is a sample, so there is always some uncertainty around a sampling error. We took that into account. Thirdly, as also many people are aware, there's a lot of migration in Iraq, and up to 1 or 2 million people may have left the country. So we took that range into account. And then lastly, and this is a survey problem that is typical when one asks about death in whether it's the last year or the last 5 years, is that households tend to move more after a death. And that means that those deaths don't get reported. So one gets underreporting of deaths as well. So we also took a range of 20 to 50% in our modeling to come up with the best estimate from these data. And that's where the 104 to 223,000 comes from.
We're talking with Thies Bourma of the World Health Organization about the numbers of Iraqis killed in the first 3 years after the U.S. invasion. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. talk@npr.org is the email address. Let's start with Bryn. Bryn's calling us from Philadelphia.
Yes, I'm concerned just by the introductory comments that were made, for instance, not counting as a war fatality if the family said it was a car accident, because I think a number of situations in which a car accident might have occurred or any number of other bus fatalities, et cetera, that wouldn't have occurred had there not been a war. And I wonder if what kind of statistical, why that was not followed through with a follow-up question when a person said they had a family member who died in a car accident, for instance.
Okay, Thies Bourma.
The interviewers, if a death was identified in the household, asked for the age and the sex of the respondents, and then also they had a list of 23 causes, including heart disease and infectious diseases, and then for injuries. So for injuries, there were four categories. It was intentional injury, armed conflict, road accident, and unintentional. And so we kept it quite simple because of in that case, if one asks about the cause of death from household members, it's often not a very reliable method to go into detail. Although with injuries, one could have perhaps added other questions, I think, as the other survey did. But in this case, it wasn't done. Now, you're right. Some of the road accidents could have been misclassified and could have been due to armed conflict.
High speed and because of fear and things like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Let him talk, okay?
So if we look at the overall number of injuries, so of the all injuries together, post-invasion, about 7% were intentional injuries, 54% were armed conflict, 16% were road accidents, and then 24% were unintentional injuries. So if, say, about a quarter of the road accidents could have been armed conflict, it would add something to the number, but it would have been a relatively
Correct.
Small proportion.
Okay, Bryn, thanks very much. We appreciate
thank
the call.
Thank you.
And Thies Bourma, we thank you for your time today. We know it's late in Geneva. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thies Boerma, the Director of Measurements and Health Information Systems for the World Health Organization, with us from the studios of the WHO in Geneva. Joining us now is Les Roberts. He's an associate clinical professor in the program on forced migration and health at Columbia University, one of the authors of a 2006 survey conducted jointly by Iraqi and Johns Hopkins University researchers. This study was published in the British medical journal The Lancet, and he joins us now by phone from his home in upstate New York. And nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Neil. Nice to be with you.
And your estimate came in considerably higher than the WHO estimate, over 600,000. Why the discrepancy, do you think?
Well, you know, this is fascinating. I've had about a dozen interviews in the last day, and I can't ever remember two studies having such similar results and having it being painted as so controversial. You know, we did a study back in June and July of 2006 in which we tried to compare the death rate before the invasion with the death rate after. And our motive was exactly the motive of your first caller. Normally, when we talk about deaths in the American Civil War, deaths in the Holocaust, we're not just interested in deaths from bullets. We're interested in the deaths that occurred because of that disruption. And in the war in Biafra, the war in Congo, 90% of all deaths were from the disruption, not from the violence itself. So we found a death rate after the invasion 2.4 times higher. That is, mortality a little more than doubled. And this new survey found a death rate before and a death rate twice as high after. They also, and Thies Boerma was very, I think, honest about this in the paper and was quite clear about it a moment ago, they knew they had underreporting. For example, before the invasion, they had a death rate of about 3 deaths per 1,000 people per year. That's about half the death rate in the United States, and they knew it was too low. Most of the neighboring countries are more around 5. In our survey, we had found 5.5, and so they adjusted it up. So we actually agree on what the death rate was before the invasion. We agree on what the death rate was after. The huge contrast between these two studies is that we think virtually all of that increase was from violence, and they believe that only a third of the increase in mortality was from violence. So
we're going to have to take a short break. Can you stay with us?
Gladly.
Les Roberts is an associate clinical professor at Columbia University. More with him and more on this controversy in just a moment. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about surveys of the numbers of Iraqis killed since the invasion almost 5 years ago now. And the latest was conducted by the Iraqi Health Ministry and the World Health Organization, and it estimates that 151,000 Iraqis died in the 3 years following the U.S.-led invasion. These numbers are difficult to come by. This one is just the latest in a series of Iraqi mortality estimates. You can get a comparison of these surveys and track key events in the Iraq War at our website at npr.org/talk. We're talking right now with Les Roberts, one of the authors of a 2006 survey conducted by researchers in Iraq and at Johns Hopkins University, published in The Lancet, which estimated that more than 600,000 Iraqis died as a result of the invasion. And partly you're saying the difference in the World Health Organization's number is if, for example, somebody died of a heart attack because of stress, the stress you suggest may have been brought on by the conflict.
Well, actually, I'm not saying something quite that innocent. What I'm saying is that we interviewed households, and we found a much higher, more than doubling of a death rate after the invasion. And when we asked people, how did your loved one die, the vast majority of the new excess deaths, in fact, a majority of all deaths, were from violence. When this WHO and Statistical Bureau of Iraq survey was done, and these government employees asked people, how did your loved one die, only about 1 in 6 deaths for them was said to be violence after the invasion. So for one reason or another, we have a pretty dramatic difference in the fraction of the excess deaths that were from violence.
Is there any way to resolve this, do you think?
You know, the great thing is, yes, this is very easily resolved by National Public Radio. Because if we're right in our Lancet study of 2006, if National Public Radio were to go out to a handful of cemeteries across Iraq, and every cemetery has a ledger where they keep track of who dies, the name, the date, and they look at the death certificate, and in most ledgers, they write down the cause of death. And if we're right, over that first 3 years of occupation, most deaths nationwide should have been from violence. And if this new WHO survey is correct, only about 1 in 6 deaths will be from violence. And I would think, without doing a fancy scientific survey, people could go out and pretty quickly get a pulse on the causes of deaths in the last few years and decide which of these surveys is roughly correct.
Les Roberts, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
Les Roberts, Associate Clinical Professor in the Program on Forced Migration and Health at Columbia University, one of the authors of a 2006 survey which was published in The Lancet that estimated more than 600,000 Iraqis died violent deaths in the first 3 years after the war. He joined us from his home in upstate New York. And joining us now is Neil Munro. He's a science reporter for the National Journal and author of this month's feature story, The Data Bomb. He's critical of some of the previous surveys, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And in addition to these two survey results, there are other methods of trying to estimate the numbers of dead in Iraq.
Yes, and it is a very difficult task because, after all, people are trying to kill each other in all directions. One basic method is simply to count up the news reports of the dead. This is a very useful method because it gives you a minimum. After that, the other basic method is to do a survey. Surveys are complex and you can lead to errors, but can find more accurate numbers and can also find how many people are not dying because of a change in government, for example.
And the number, the survey you're talking about, the media survey, it's called sometimes, the Iraq body count, I guess, is the best
yep.
known of that. Their estimate through the first 3 years of the war, the same period we're talking about here, was 45,000 to 48,000. And again, that's a sizable difference between them and the survey numbers, either survey.
Correct.
And that's going to be, by definition, you suggest, more modest, more cautious.
Yeah, well, one of the virtues of the IBC people is that they say this up front. They say, we just count the reports. We do not claim to be counting the full thing. And in a way, that's quite admirable. It serves also as a useful floor on casualty estimates, death estimates, and a useful guide to trends. Again, both incomplete, both imperfect, but useful and very cheap.
Could either the U.S. or the Iraqi governments or both have been more helpful?
Why would they want to be?
That's a good question, but could they be?
Well, you see, you got to remember what the war is about. Now, people argue about what the war is about, fine. But from one faction's point of view, the al-Qaeda guys, they want to show that the change in Iraq is bad, disastrous, a catastrophe, a mistake. So they want to pump up the dead. And they do this by exploding bombs in the middle of marketplaces. The other factions, if you like, the Iraqi government, the elected Iraqi government now, the U.S. government, want to show the war as a success. And therefore, they want to minimize the costs and maximize the visible benefits. Neither side has, no side has incentive to tell the truth here.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Jeff. Jeff calling us from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes. I had a question regarding, it seems like recently I had heard a quote from maybe the Diane Rehm show that was upwards of like 1.2 million dead Iraqis. So I was wondering how that compared, if anyone else had heard that,
mm-hmm.
and what the ratio maybe was from citizen to military personnel. Now.
Hey, I'm your man on that one. The okay, there was a report put out as Petraeus was about to speak in Congress in which a British polling firm announced a death toll of 1.2 million. Well, you know, the media kind of published this, but if you scratched at it, as I did, I called up the Iraqi guy who did it. There was the British firm had delegated the poll to an Iraqi who spent his own money to do the poll, and he told me, I do these polls to drive the Americans out of Iraq. When the Americans invaded, I was an officer. I was teaching at the Ministry of Defense, National Defense University in downtown Iraq, and I wanted to fight the Americans, and so I thought I'd use polling to get the Americans out, and I timed this survey to coincide with Petraeus, and no, I'm not giving you the data, and no, I can't get it peer-reviewed yet, and this kind of stuff. Now, some people believe that poll. Others don't.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. In fact, timing of the release of these surveys has been significant in the past.
Yes. Gosh, there's a lot of suspicion in this business, and some people say, including the one of the... some of the polls are timed for political events, and the two polls published in the two surveys published in The Lancet and done by John Hopkins were, they made every effort to release them before the 2004 poll, the 2004 election and the 2006 election. It was said by the John Hopkins guys they had to release them before the election, otherwise their survey teams might have been killed, perhaps, but that's what they said.
Well, joining us now is Sarah Sewell. She's director of the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard University, where she directs their program on national security and human rights. She was first Deputy Assistant Secretary for Peacekeeping and Humanitarian Assistance during the Clinton administration, and she joins us now from member station WBUR in Boston. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
And I think you heard Neil Monroe say, why would the U.S. government or the Iraqi government release these numbers? Isn't it a responsibility of the U.S. government to keep track of the wreckage in Iraq?
Well, let's consider the word responsibility, legal responsibility, moral responsibility, professional responsibility. I think you can debate what kind of responsibility the U.S. military has. I like to think of their responsibility as one of minimizing civilian harm, which is what they claim to do. So I'm less concerned about what they're counting than that they're counting the things that they need to count in order to learn and make good on the vows to minimize civilian harm. And there's been some interesting developments on the ground in Iraq just in the last couple of years on that front, where I think the U.S. military is finally recognizing the value of using data so that they can learn and reduce civilian casualties.
Well, it's not just the Defense Department. It's the United States government. I can understand the Defense Department is busy with maybe other things. Is there no one else who takes this or has this job?
Well, if you look at just Iraq, for example, there's really no one else in the field. So if this job is to be carried out in situations with a high degree of violence, it probably will be carried out by the military. And that begs the question of whether or not it raises a more fundamental question, which is why do you want to know the numbers of civilian dead? And depending on why you want to know the numbers of civilian dead, you're going to have different requirements for your accuracy, and you're going to have different corollary questions. So if you want to know the overall costs of war, then perhaps surveys that include all causes of death and show you the change in the overall death rates are what you need. And then maybe to the person accuracy is not vital for that question. If you want to know trend lines, you've got a different sort of approach, whether your strategy is working. That's particularly important in counterinsurgency. Whether you want to be responding to specific problems, you may want to focus in on one particular type or cause or area of death. And if you're trying to do operational learning from a military perspective, it may be most important for you to identify the areas in which the largest number of civilians are being killed so that you can really focus in on correcting the situation.
Well, there's also a public relations and political aspect to this, I think we all have to admit. And if the Defense Department or the U.S. government doesn't release numbers, it's at the mercy of people who are issuing estimates anywhere from 45,000 to 1.2 million.
Absolutely. And that's an argument that I've made for a long number of years. One of the interesting things about the Iraq body count, which is now considered sort of the, as we just heard described, the floor in the civilian casualty counting business. I remember very well a couple of different conferences with military officials where everyone was questioning the method and the motive of the IBC's approach, and it wasn't until the first Lancet survey came out that everyone said, oh, well, goodness, the Iraq body count is so much more reliable. So our targets keep shifting, and I think the fundamental point is that if we really wanted to know, we could do all source data compilation, and we could combine all the different methods that we know each have their individual flaws, and we could get fairly good gross approximations of the kind of humanitarian impact from war. And there's a different question, and I think an important separate question about whether operational learning based on an understanding of the causality of civilian harm from the perspective of the U.S. military. And that, I think, the U.S. actually has a success story there in terms of looking at what they call escalation of force incidents. And when they started to, you know, the saying in the military is you inspect what you expect. Hmm. And when they started recording the numbers of civilian deaths at checkpoints and block points principally, they were able to really focus in on the tactics, techniques, and procedures they were using and reduce the number of civilians killed from 10 a week in July 05 to 6 in a week. To 1 per week by June 06. That's a significant change, and it really points, I think, to the value of measurement in trying to achieve objectives.
One final question that we, I guess, haven't addressed, and that's moral responsibility. The United States started this conflict. It initiated this.
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah.
I think the U.S. Ought to. I don't think if the U.S. issues casualty figures, it will have the credibility that it needs. But I think that the U.S. ought to capture what it can and share that information with others who would be able to similarly share information. And everyone would be able to reach their own understanding and assessment. You know, one of the arguments I hear all the time from the Defense Department is, you know, not only is it not really our job to count, but nobody will believe us. Well, just share what you have. And everything's going to have its own limitations. There are going to always be questions of both bias and methodology. And I think the more we know, the more we'll be able to likely triangulate our way to the answers that will help us accomplish humanitarian objectives in the face of what everyone hopefully would agree is a war that we'd like to avoid.
Sarah Sewell, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Sewell, director of the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard. She was first Deputy Assistant Secretary for Peacekeeping and Humanitarian Assistance during the Clinton administration, with us today from member station WBUR. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And still with us is Neil Monroe, science reporter for the National Journal, author of the feature story, The Data Bomb. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Carl. Carl with us from Buffalo, New York.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The question of the U.S. military reporting is rather a disingenuous one, since clearly the factors of the war have taken an enormous toll. I think characterizing it as wreckage as opposed to carnage suggests a bit of subterfuge. Additionally, the question of are they heart attacks or have the Iraqi people suffered as they did in Fallujah by the possible use of chemical warfare, the use of depleted uranium poses a continual problem, and the infrastructural damage obviously has an enormous impact on health care. Furthermore, and this may sound like a diatribe, but I would like this to be considered as a rebuttal. Furthermore, the Iraqi people suffer from the loss of heads of households, and you have an enormous number of children who are at the risk of injury, death, etc., and that can't be. The total impact can't be considered without looking at a long-term generational dysfunction.
Yeah. Neil Monroe, does Carl have a point there?
I write about science. If Carl wants to say the results are good or bad, fine. But I write about science. And the Iraqis get to vote on their government. And whether they want to go through this or not is up to them.
Again, your response is disingenuous. Please address what I have said. It is not electoral by any means. It is the U.S. imposing its will and the fallout of that.
Okay, Carl, I think we're just going to have to leave it there. As we look at this controversy, do you agree with Les Roberts that there are easy ways to resolve these conflicts, Neil Monroe?
Easy is too strong a word. Because technically there are some ways to resolve a variety of existing doubts. But as Carl made clear, this is a political issue. People want to believe certain things. They want to assign certain values to certain numbers of deaths and define them up and down and such like. The science is easier to decide. The harder thing is to decide the costs and benefits of the war.
Is it easy to decide, to determine, on one hand, who caused casualties to who? Obviously, the conflict was initiated by the United States, but within that conflict.
Well, the first conflict was initiated by the United States, knocking down Saddam. That was actually a fairly low destruction war, as wars go. The second conflict was initiated by the Sunnis, and they were trying to regain power. Al-Qaeda joined with them. Well, okay. Americans get to decide who's responsible for that. Whatever the situation is, Americans also get to decide what the moral value of life is and whether it should be counted and whether they want to continue going or not. But in terms of science, scientists can provide a lot of answers.
Neil Monroe, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it. Neil Monroe, a science reporter for the National Journal, author of this month's feature story, The Data Bomb. He joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, we're going to be talking about polling and New Hampshire and why the pollsters got it wrong. Andy Cohut of the Pew Research Center joins us. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join that conversation. Email talk@npr.org. This is NPR News.